mornings. I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, a conversation with the superintendent of the Findlay City Schools, Dr. Andy Hatton, with his welcome back message for a new academic year. Also this morning, Ohio Treasurer Robert Sprague this week is highlighting the state's Stable Account program, allowing individuals with disabilities to better manage both necessities and specialized expenses without jeopardizing access to federal assistance programs. And happening around town, representing hope in the fight against a disease impacting thousands of families, the Hancock County Parkinson's Network is holding a tulip bulb sale this month. We'll get details. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Wednesday, August 14th, 2024. So a follow-up to a story from earlier in the summer. You remember back in June when two camels got loose from the barnyard area at Cedar Point. You remember that big story? The camels got loose and were wandering around Frontierland there at Cedar Point. And then, just a couple of days later, there were a bunch of goats that got loose from the petting zoo area as well. Well, it turns out, now, again, if you remember the story, each time all of the animals were safely returned to the barnyard, there were no injuries to either the animals or any guests. So it was better than it could have. I mean, it could have been a really worse story than it turned out to be. It was more embarrassing than anything else. Well, now, after an investigation, citations have been issued. It turns out that in each case, the animals were actually turned loose by park guests who were able to get into places that they shouldn't have been and open the gates to the animals' enclosures. The United States Department of Agriculture Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service has issued three citations to the owners of Honey Hill Farm, which is the company that operates the petting zoo section under contract for Cedar Point. And there were some minor violations that they have issued citations to the owners of Honey Hill Farm. And the park itself, Cedar Point, has stated that they have updated their protocols to ensure that this kind of incident does not happen again. So, I don't know that they know. None of the citations to the individuals who released the animals, I'm not sure that they know who those individuals are, but I would imagine if and when they find out, those individuals will no longer be welcome at Cedar Point. That is my guess. So, a follow-up to that weird story from earlier this summer. Among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, you may have heard of the term loneliness epidemic, the loneliness epidemic that we seem to have in this country today. The idea that it is actually harder in the digital age to make friends than it used to be. And it's kind of ironic because in the age of social media, we actually have fewer personal connections with other human beings. Well, a new research study by the American Friendship Project suggests that this loneliness epidemic may actually be a myth. What they found is that the average American has 4 to 5 close friends, on average, between 4 and 5 close friends. And only 3% of Americans say that they have no friends at all. And what makes this interesting is that you compare those numbers to the numbers over time, similar surveys over time, and those figures have remained pretty much unchanged for the past 40 years. So well before social media came along. As a matter of fact, they say quite the opposite is the case when it comes to long-distance friendships, which are now very common, whereas decades ago, before social media, that was not the case, which suggests that modern technology can actually help bridge those physical divides. Now, that being said, the study did find that people may be yearning for deeper connections, although 75% in the survey say that they were satisfied with the number of friends they had, 42% felt as though they were not as close to their friends as they would like to be. Not physically close, but emotionally close. They were not as their friends. This is not a tightly knit circle of friends. They would like to be closer to those that they know. So that may be an issue, but the number of friends is basically the same as it always has been. Kind of interesting. I'm not sure if this will help you make friends or not, but from the file of things that we didn't know we needed, Chuck E. Cheese is now launching membership plans. You happen to see this? Chuck E. Cheese launching a membership plans. Membership plan. Unlimited visits for a monthly fee beginning at $8. Just $8 a month for the bronze tier, or $30 a month for the gold tier. Be a Chuck E. Cheese gold tier member. The passes include a certain number of games per visit and discounts on food and drink, depending on the level of membership you choose. They can be used at all 470 or so participating locations in the U.S. Did we really need a Chuck E. Cheese membership plan? I'm not sure, but we have it. Let's see. Other items here among the first things you need to know. The most interesting and buzzworthy stories to start your day. Cigarette smoking in the U.S. is now at an 80-year low. In a new Gallup poll released earlier this week, 11% of U.S. adults said that they had smoked cigarettes in the past week, and that matched the historic low mark measured in 2022. The smoking rate is now around half what it was a decade ago, and compared to 1944, when the folks at Gallup first asked about cigarette smoking, the number was 41% of American adults. So way down from, 80 years ago. Gallup says major part of the continued decline in smoking rates, the dropping number of young adults who are lighting up. So that is good news. Now, if you add vaping into the mix and e-cigarettes, it is numbers are not as encouraging, but at least it is a trend in the right direction with respect to physical tobacco use. And also, not only are we taking better care of ourselves, we're taking better care of our cars. According to a recent survey, Americans are taking better care of their vehicles because it's getting so doggone expensive to replace them. 73% of car owners are making a concerted effort to maintain their current vehicle due to rising costs of buying a new vehicle, or even buying a used vehicle is much more expensive than it used to be. This poll commissioned by Pennzoil found that Gen Xers in particular are striving to keep the car they already have in good operating order. And I thought this was kind of interesting when it comes to maintenance on our cars. We may be fine buying generic or store brand food and household items, but our cars apparently deserve nothing but the best. 57% say they prefer to buy a brand name product to maintain their vehicle. Just 34% would go with a private label or generic product. Although we could be saving money in other ways, 80% of those in the survey rely on someone else to do basic maintenance for them, like taking a car to a commercial shop for an oil change, things like that. Things that we could do ourselves with just a little effort. So, well, that was kind of interesting as well. And lastly, here among the first things you need to know this morning, this is your assignment as we get into the final weeks, final days of summer before we turn our attention to back to school and the fall season. Here's what you need to do. You need to go through all of the photos on your device that you snapped over the summer and vacation and whatever, and either download them from the cloud or get rid of the ones that really aren't any good. It's the problem with these digital devices, we take so many photos and we keep even the lousy ones. You know, even the bad, we don't worry about it because, you know, back in the days of film cameras, you had to be very judicious about, you know, the photos that you took because you only had so many snapshots before you had to change the film and get it processed and all of that was expensive. Now, we just snap away on our phones, we don't think about it. But new research has shown that cloud storage data is most of it. Most of the cloud storage data, where many of our photos and such reside, much of this is what they call dark data, meaning it is used once and then never used again. All of this content is sitting in a data center somewhere and taking up energy, using energy and using natural resources. And they're talking about the huge impact that this has on the environment. Ian Hodgkinson of Loughborough University. Is that someplace in Europe? I believe it is. He says, every piece of data, whether it be an image, an Instagram post, whatever it is, every little bit of data contains a carbon footprint attached to it. Not only are the data centers using incredible amounts of energy to store all of this information, they also, the servers are incredibly hot and they use a lot of water to cool them down. So, and they're very noisy and they, you know, consume large amounts of energy, all of this. So if you want to do something nice for the environment, download your photos, get them off of the cloud. I mean, cloud has its place to keep some things protected and safe and easily accessible, but you don't have to have every single piece of data, photos and everything, all of those internet memes that you share and everything being stored there, dark data on the World Wide Web, and it's eating up natural resources. That's kind of interesting there. Something you can do a good spring cleaning for your digital device and your cloud storage and help save the environment there. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Wednesday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchak. Your WTOL 11 weather. Partly to mostly sunny skies expected today, a high around 80, partly cloudy tonight, a low in the low 60s. The Findlay Police Department is urging school bus safety as the new school year is about to begin. Parents are urged to talk with their kids about how to act around school buses, and drivers are reminded to keep their eyes peeled for children getting on and off buses. Officer Brian White says drivers also need to remember to slow down in school zones when children are present.
Kids are notorious for not really paying attention sometimes, so we really need to look out for them and make sure that they're safe, because I do hear a lot of these stories of kids being struck by vehicles while near or around a school bus.
The first day back for students in Findlay City Schools will be Thursday. Get more in the story on our website. Owens Community College President Dr. Dion Somerville delivered her State of the College address. Dr. Somerville focused her address on the strategic plan adopted last year. She utilized the plan's 6 objectives to showcase what the academic year will feature, including building a community of belonging and expanding partnerships. The address was held twice at the Findlay area campus in the morning and again at the Toledo area campus in the afternoon. Get more in the story on our website. This week, the Ohio Ballot Board will meet to write the language voters will see in November for the proposed constitutional amendment to end gerrymandering in Ohio and overhaul how congressional and state legislative districts are drawn.
The 3-2 Republican majority panel will provide a summary of the more than 16-page long proposed amendment on Friday. Now, the proposal is aimed at replacing the current map making, which is made up of lawmakers, with a single 15-member commission equally divided among Democrats, Republicans, and independents.
ONN's Tracy Townsend reporting. Corey Ross in local schools says in the spring, fifth grade classes researched and presented an idea to have bat houses on campus. The school district says the bat houses are now complete and up and are ready for residents. See some pictures in the story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
And now today's cover story. It is the final day of summer vacation for Findlay City Schools students before heading back to class tomorrow. Teachers and staff, of course, have been back in the classroom for several days now, getting ready for students to return. And even as we speak, Superintendent Dr. Andy Hatton is meeting with district educators for their annual convocation before the first day of classes. And yesterday, he took time to speak with us to share his welcome back message for the new academic year. Dr. Hatton, thanks for taking the time. How excited are teachers and administrators to get this new year started?
Well, hey, Chris, thank you as always for having me on. I always love talking about one of my favorite things in the world, and that's Findlay City Schools. We are ready. I mean, it's the way the calendar fell this year. It's an early start for us this year. We've had teachers back on Monday, and then on Tuesday, there were meetings in the buildings. And then Wednesday, is our convocation. And then we've got students back on Thursday. So everybody's just ramping up for a great school year. Open houses have been taking place this week. And
right.
Schedule pickup, get the upperclassmen, the middle school and high school kids picking up their schedules. The buildings are looking great. The bus routes are ready to go. We're amped up for another school year.
I was going to mention, even though the students won't be back in class until Thursday, the school's already a buzz of activity, as you were mentioning. Talk a little bit about what is going on behind the scenes right now in this the past week or two ahead of classes starting up again. What are our teachers and administrators doing? Kind of take us through those routines, I guess, if you will.
Oh, for sure. I appreciate that. Yeah, there are many, many administrators. And then, of course, like our operations team work all year round. And we actually in public education, a lot of us are prepping for the subsequent school year starting in, even late February, early March of a given calendar year, because we start building the master schedules and students start filling out for their, their course selection.
Mm-hmm.
But in the summer, in the summer, what's happening is, and for the last several weeks when all of the administrators started to return in late July, we've had leadership meetings that are centered on educational leadership and, the spirit that we want to have in the service to each and every child in our district. One of the things we did that was a little unique here in Findlay City Schools was we allowed, our teachers, many of them start coming back very early to set up their rooms, to prep the opening lessons, to look over their class lists, to sometimes reach out to families in advance to introduce themselves, and prepare those initial lessons for the opening weeks of school. So
yeah.
That all is taking place. We've got a new food service approach. We have a contracted service that we're very excited about in terms of enhancing our food service and nutritional services to our students. All of the bus routes get laid out and they start testing out the bus routes to make sure that we're running on time.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, and then of course, cleaning the buildings, changing the air filters, making sure everything is just ready to go all across the district.
Yeah,
every detail.
A lot of things that go into reopening the buildings for a new academic year. You mentioned holding things like the staff in services and the meetings and so on that go on with the teachers and building administrators and district administrators. Is there I want to use the word theme for the year. I'm not sure if that's necessarily the right terminology, but, what is the message to the staff ahead of the students returning to class?
Yeah, I appreciate that. So I'll give you a little sneak peek at the the convocation speech that is going to, the mission that we're looking at, that theme that you were talking about. I mean, in Findlay City Schools, we're all about academic excellence, diverse opportunity, and true belonging. So that's always like everything that we do should be flowing through one of those three main tenets that we have in our strategic plan. But the North Star is always the service to each and every child that enters our buildings and that we serve in this great community. So this year, you know, last year we talked a lot about belief and just having that belief. I actually used the Ted Lasso story, and, you know, just that we've got to believe in our kids, believe in each other, and believe in this amazing community. This year, we're going to really be looking at the science of hope. There's a lot of research out there in positive psychology that hope is a plan, and that it's rooted in goals. It's rooted in, you know, the belief that we can make a difference, even though we don't know exactly what the future is going to look like. So that's what we're going to be centering on in the service of children this year.
As you referenced, by now you've held the open houses, the Meet the Teacher nights, orientation sessions for students. Older students should have their class schedules in hand by now. But if there are further questions, where can families get the answers that they need?
So we always encourage families to reach out to their teachers once they know who they are. Their building principals, their school counselors are an amazing resource to help students and families navigate, you know, both academic and well-being aspects of the school year. Mm-hmm. Also on, of course, our website is a wealth of information. We have a lot of information out there for families, including all the diverse opportunities that our amazing community provides. Sometimes those are outside of the school and the school day. And then also following us on social media, whether it's Instagram or Facebook, we are trying to communicate with our families in a multitude of ways to get them the information that they need to have a great school year.
And important to point out, I think, that this isn't just applicable for the start of the school year. Every educator will say that the key to a successful year is an open line of dialogue between families and schools. What do you do to encourage that dialogue?
Well, you nailed it. We need to have strong partnerships with our families, and I do think we have great, you know, families and communication here in Findlay City Schools, and that's one of the expectations that we have. I talked to new teachers just over a week ago and new staff, and I said, instead of, you know, whether you get an email from a family member or whether you want to share some information, I said, pick up the phone. Let's have a human-to-human contact. Let's get together face-to-face, or let's always start with a phone call, so that we're having that personal touch with our communications. Obviously, sometimes email is, you know, convenient, especially with people's busy schedules.
Right.
But we want to have as much two-way communication and openness, because we are here to serve the public. We're here to serve the families here, and we're here to serve the students.
I know, as we've talked about before on the program, and you were kind of referencing it a little bit earlier, people are going to be hearing a lot more from the Findlay City Schools about funding, the tax measure that is going to be on the ballot. Some will support it, some will oppose it for a variety of reasons. But speak to the importance of not letting that side of school kind of get in the way of the educational endeavor.
Yeah, the Board of Education is, as we've talked about, placed an issue on the ballot for November 5th, and it is for a 1% earned income tax here in the city of Findlay, and actually just exclusive to the Findlay City School District. And there were a lot of reasons for that, obviously, and there are things that an earned income tax would not capture, such as Social Security, pension, and investments, and, right, and much more, because we felt that was like best for our community. Now, one of the things that you said in terms of, we want to make sure that we can continue, because the operating dollars go directly into the classroom. 76%, in fact, of our operating dollars go directly into the classroom, which ranks us second out of our 45 most comparable districts. But what we want to do is make sure that we are on a path to maintain the excellence that is expected in our school district. So we want our primary focus to stay on the kids and to stay on serving those kids. And, you know, to do that, we, you know, do need to be successful in November. But if the community tells us no at that point, which is obviously we're going to listen to our community, then we will have to right size things in line with the budget.
Bottom line it here. What is your back to school message for students as we get ready to throw open the doors, begin another academic year? If people hear nothing else from our conversation, what do you want folks to take away?
I want students to come to school prepared to learn and eager to learn. And I want them to be curious. I want questions. I want thinkers, and I want them to apply their knowledge, and I want them to seek out their interests. I want them to have a two-way dialogue as well. We want kids to apply and not just have sit and get experiences. We want to be creating experiences for students that inspire them to learn and want to learn more. And so I just hope that they come with a lot of energy, a lot of school spirit, and that we just make it a great year together.
Again, Findlay City School Superintendent Dr. Andy Hatton with us ahead of the first day of school, beginning of a new academic year. Dr. Hatton, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Chris. Appreciate you as well.
So today, August 14th, is recognized by the National Association of State Treasurers as Able Savings Day. And around the country, state treasurers are highlighting these savings vehicles. In Ohio, our version of this is called the Stable Account Program, of which there are 42,000 active accounts. And joining us this morning to talk more about what this is and why it's important is State Treasurer Robert Sprague. Mr. Treasurer, first of all, what is the Stable Account Program for those that don't know?
Well, Chris, it's a game changer for anybody who's living with a disability here in the state of Ohio. When I became treasurer, we had about maybe 9,000 of these accounts open. We now have 42,000 of these accounts open in Ohio's program, and they're from both Ohio account holders and also families across the United States. And what it allows families to do and individuals to do that open up these accounts is to be able to work out in the community, to be able to live out in the community because they have control over their own money and are able to buy the things that they need to live out in the community. Mm-hmm. And so it helps people with disabilities be able to have independence is the bottom line. And unfortunately, we have Medicaid rules that they'll take away your Social Security and also your medical benefits if you have over $2,000 in your name. And so you open up one of these accounts and it allows you to live and work and not run afoul of all those rules.
Okay, that's really one of the keys or the key to this, because one of the questions that I was going to have when I first was looking at this is, what is the difference between a stable account and, say, a health savings account or some sort of other investment vehicle to help those with disabilities save money, pay expenses, pay medical expenses, specialized care, that kind of thing?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And they can spend it on what they need. And one of the most powerful things we just got done down in Licking County, awarding them a certificate for partnering with our office on doing a direct deposit for stable accounts. That way, you don't have to transfer a bunch of money from your pay stub or your, you know, another bank account into your stable account. You don't run afoul of all the rules. Mm-hmm. You just put the money right in there. Plus, employees look at that as a benefit. You know, if I have a son or a daughter or a grandson or a granddaughter that uses a stable account, I just put the money right in and not have to worry about it. So we just awarded Licking County. They're doing this direct deposit payroll feature with a stable account with our office. And we were up in Lucas County. It's one of the first counties that did this with us. And we had just the most powerful story by Jarita. And she got up in front of the commissioners and she said, look, the state of Ohio has great programs, many great programs. She said, but this one gave me something that nothing else has. It has given me self-esteem because I'm able to live and work out in the community and have some control over my own life. So we're really highlighting that independence today.
Now, the stable account is for those with disabilities. And again, as you mentioned, allows individuals to save for various expenses, living expenses, specialized expenses to deal with their disability and so on without jeopardizing mm-hmm. access to those federal assistance programs. When we say individuals with disabilities, is that any disability or, you know, what kind of umbrella does this cover?
It's early onset disability, so before the age of 26.
Okay.
But in the year 2026, there is a new rule that goes into effect that raises the threshold for the onset of the disability of 46 years of age.
Okay.
And when that happens, we'll see a lot of our military veterans also be able to, you know, if they're disabled or have a disability, be able to come onto the ABLE accounts as well.
So
we call them in the state of Ohio stable.
So we're talking physical disabilities, mental disabilities, really anything in that umbrella?
Sure, absolutely. Anybody who's living with a disability, it could be cerebral palsy, it could be Down syndrome, it could be, you know, injury from a car accident.
Mm-hmm.
It could be anything. It just has to be onset before the age of 26.
And again, to emphasize, and I think this is important, and you were alluding to it, we kind of mentioned it earlier, we're talking about money that can be spent for specialized expenses in dealing with that disability, but also for everyday, you know, living expenses, housing, you know, that kind of thing. There's a wide variety of expenses that qualify or that these funds can be used for.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, quite frankly, there's a very, very broad range, and it's everything from being able to pay rent, although Social Security sometimes pays rent for people. But, you know, we have stories of people paying rent. We have stories of people buying cars. And you may go, well, that's just normal stuff. What's such a big deal about that? But they're able to buy with their own money, and that's a tremendous sense of independence and freedom and self-esteem to be able to do that and structure their own lives. And, so it's a wide range of things. It could be medical care. It could be extra stuff that you need at your house or,
mm-hmm.
you know, extra things for your particular situation. Or it could even be, a trip. And people are like, well, why would you have, be allowed to pay for a trip or something? Well, because, everybody goes on vacation. And so, it's just all these normal living things that are included in as eligibility for the stable account.
Now, there are some limitations, as there usually are to accounts of this type, but they're pretty generous. I think it's, $18,000 annually that can be deposited into these stable accounts. And your office has referred to this as sort of like a 529 plan. But for those living with disabilities, folks are familiar with the 529 college savings plans. In that case, any individual, a family member or so on, can make a contribution to that account as well. Does that apply to the stable account as well, or does it have to be that person's individual earnings or individual money that goes into this account?
No, you can also make a contribution as a father or a mother.
Okay.
Or a grandfather or a grandmother into the account. And if anybody would like to open up one of the accounts or see what the limits are on your rights, you can put $18,000, about $18,000 into one of these accounts every year. And then an additional amount if you're working. So, if you're not working, your family can put money into the account. If you are working, an additional amount, I think it's probably right around $14,000,
mm-hmm.
Give or take a few dollars there is the threshold if you're working. And you can go to www.stableaccount.com, and that's our webpage at the State Treasurer's Office, and you can learn more about these accounts. They are super easy to open. Our team has done a fantastic job of making sure that this thing is streamlined. We have one of the best programs. I think it's the best program, and it may be the biggest program in the United States of America. And so it's easy to find out everything on that website.
And you can actually open the account. Is there any minimum to open an account?
I think there's a small monthly fee, and we've worked really hard to get that fee down to something very, very reasonable.
Okay.
And in April, we just launched a new initiative where we actually match for Ohio residents and Ohio families $25. So we'll help you out with the first $25 into your account there.
Okay.
As part of kind of an initiative that we have going on this year, because we have been successful in lowering these fees, and we want to make sure that the stable account is available to everybody here in the state of Ohio.
Nice little added incentive there to get folks to learn more about it. We do have a link on our webpage at goodmornings.net for more information about the Stable Account Program for those with disabilities in the state of Ohio. As you mentioned, 42,000 plus active accounts today in this program, and today being Able Savings Day. Certainly appropriate day to highlight that. Again, Treasurer Robert Sprague with us this morning. Mr. Treasurer, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Chris.
You're listening to Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
A couple of kayakers in California had some anxious moments recently. Ian Waters was kayaking in Half Moon Bay with a friend when he noticed a fin sticking out of the water. They were kayaking along and suddenly found themselves being followed by a 14-foot great white shark. Saw the fin sticking out of the water. The shark was just following the kayak around. And kayak is no match. I mean, they weren't paddle boarding or anything out in the open or swimming in the open water. They were in a kayak. But still, kayak, not much protection from a 14-foot great white. what I thought was, apparently there's video of this. I haven't seen it. But what I thought was kind of gave me a chuckle in this story. Ian said, we tried to keep each other calm and not give any reason for the shark to have a reaction, you know, no sudden moves or anything like that. The way they got the shark to stop tailing them is they said we led it towards some seals, and eventually the shark decided to let us go. Here, go eat the seals instead. That's not sure how the seals felt about that, but it was a solution. Just let him do some seals. Here, go eat that. Go. They're probably in trouble with PETA now for being the shark to the seals. Elsewhere in the broken news, also from the state of California, some residents in San Francisco near a parking lot for Waymo. You know Waymo, there's the self-driving cars. They have them in San Francisco now. They use them as like taxis, as self-driving cars. And when they're not in use, there's a giant parking lot where they store the Waymo vehicles. Well, residents near this parking lot now say that the driverless cars sometimes start honking at one another in the middle of the night for no apparent reason. Have you ever had that happen? You've been awakened by a neighbor's car, you know, the alarm goes off and so on. Eventually, you know, the neighbor can shut it off. But these are driverless cars, so they just start honking in the middle of the night for no apparent reason. Over the past 2 weeks, I've been awakened more times in the middle of the night than I have for 20 years before that, according to one resident, Russell Pofsky. Waymo, in response to the complaints, says they are aware that in some scenarios our vehicles may briefly honk while navigating the parking lot, and they are working on a fix. They're working on it. These driverless cars honking at each other. Oh, man. Sometimes technology, not all it's cracked up to be. Woman is facing charges in Minnesota after backing into a police car over the weekend. That's a bad day. The Chaska Police Department says officers responded to a dangerous driving complaint on Sunday after a vehicle was seen swerving, driving the wrong way, and driving through someone's yard. An officer pulled the car over, but the driver put the vehicle in reverse and backed into the car, the patrol car. I don't know whether this person intended to do that. The story doesn't make it clear whether this was intentional on the part of the driver or whether it was an accident, but it does say that a breathalyzer test revealed the woman's blood alcohol level at 0.31, nearly four times the legal limit. No one was hurt, Police urge the community to drive sober and stay safe. Backing into a police car. Oops. Let's see. And a couple of other items here in the broken news this morning. The odd and unusual side of the headlines. A Pennsylvania man who allegedly tried to break into a jail eventually succeeded, although not quite the way maybe that he had planned. Surveillance footage obtained by local news reporters in the Pittsburgh area show the suspect, identified as 34-year-old Charles Felder, attempting a break-in at the local jail. He tried to break in, but he became too tired and collapsed. Break-in wasn't going too well, and it just tuckered him out. He collapsed taking a nap right there. He was trying to break into the jail. Mr. Felder, who did manage to put up a fight when police arrived, was taken to a nearby hospital and then charged with attempted burglary, criminal mischief, institutional vandalism, and harassment. He now has a preliminary hearing scheduled for later this month, and in the meantime, he is being held, where else, at the jail he tried so valiantly to break into. So he got in, but why would you try and break into a jail? I mean... if you do the right things, they'll take you to jail anyway. You don't have to break in. And finally, in the broken news this morning, the story of a man from Macomb County, Michigan, who recently hit the state's fantasy jackpot for nearly $800,000 just one day after missing hitting the jackpot by just one number. Wow. Let's see here. 53-year-old man, who wants to remain anonymous, tells MichiganLottery.com, after the drawing, I saw an email from the lottery that said I had that I won $1 million. And I thought that was all I'd won until another email came telling me to log into my account to claim my prize. When I logged in and saw $795,905 pending, I'm sorry. Let me go back and reread that quote. After the drawing, I saw an email from the lottery that said I had won $1. Just $1 in the drawing. And I thought that was it, just a buck. So no big deal. But then another email came telling me to log into my account to claim my prize. And so when I did, I saw that the pending amount was actually $795,905. He said his first thought was that it had to have been a scam. But now that I am at the lottery office claiming my prize, he said, it is starting to hit me that this indeed is real. He said the win came as a big shock, especially after coming so close just a night earlier, just missing the jackpot by one lousy number. He said, what's crazy is the night before, I matched 4 out of the 5 numbers on my Fantasy 5 ticket and thought I was so close. I was excited to win $100 in that drawing, but bummed that I was one number off from such a large jackpot prize. Could have never imagined that the very next night I would actually win the jackpot. I saw that story, and I'm having a strange, in reading the story, learning about this man's fortune and his luck, I have a strange combination of envy and, well, let's face it, hatred. You know, on the one hand, I'm really jealous of somebody. On the other hand, I just hate people that have that kind of luck. You know what I mean? I just, man. But no, good for him. That's wild. Just a day after missing it by one number, he hits the jackpot. What are the odds? There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
We talk to the coaches here on the WFIN Coaches Corner. Hi, this is John Marshall. Join me each week from Ralphie's for the Coaches Corner, presented by the Granary Gifts and Furniture. We'll cover the Findlay Trojans, the BBC, University of Findlay, and much more. The coaches' comments are here each and every week. The Coaches Corner returns Wednesday, August 21st at 6 on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. The numbers are in from the Olympics, and NBC Universal took home the gold in their own right. The 2024 Summer Games in Paris drew a combined average of 30.6 million viewers across all platforms, including streaming, marking an 82% jump in viewership compared to the Tokyo Games 4 years ago, or 3 years ago, actually, because they were delayed due to the pandemic. But an 82% jump in viewership. The big winner, Peacock. According to Axios, NBC had big expectations for Peacock when they launched the platform back in 2020. And the service, which lags behind all of the other major streaming platforms in terms of subscribers, is finally getting that boost that the network envisioned when it launched the platform. At least 8 of Peacock's 10 most streamed days of all time have been from the Olympics. And because they loosened the rules about what videos could be shared online, social media played a huge role in driving viewership, both streaming and on the broadcast networks and cable channels. And now, of course, because the next Summer Games will be held in L.A., the entertainment and pop culture capital of the world, already expectations are even higher for 2028. So how do you follow that up? A recent survey of more than 10,000 U.S. adults, they asked, what sports, if any, would you like to see added to future Summer Olympics? And some of the responses were kind of interesting. Number one on the list, 13% said baseball. Like to see baseball back in the Olympics. Followed closely by mixed martial arts with 12% of the vote. Mixed martial arts. All right. Why not add bullfighting in there too? Yeah. Beat each other to a pulp. Then we get some kind of interesting ideas. 6% said bowling. You can add bowling to the Olympics. 4% said beach soccer, which you got beach volleyball, so why not beach soccer? Esports got 4% of the vote. And I think it's probably only a matter of time before they add esports to the Olympics. Then cricket got 3% and squash with 1% of the vote. Want to add squash to the Olympics? By the way, baseball is coming back, by the way. If you were among those who want to see baseball in the Olympics, it is coming back to the 2028 games, and I believe softball is as well. So, happening around town, the Hancock County Parkinson's Network is holding their second annual tulip bulb sale this month. Joining us this morning are Linda DeArmond and Barb Matheny from the Hancock County Parkinson's Network. It sounds kind of weird talking about tulips right now because we typically think of these things in the spring. But as it turns out, I know this because I looked it up. I'm not a green thumb. I don't know this naturally. I had to look this up. This is the time to plant those.
It's coming up pretty soon this fall in our growing area. So, yeah, need to think about it now.
Yeah, very good. And the reason for tulips?
Of course. So if you're familiar with Parkinson's disease, and that is the disease and the folks who are affected by it and their caregivers that we seek to support, their international symbol, in fact, is the red tulip. And so in communities that have also had endeavors like ours, they have had tulip bulb sales. They've been very successful. And so the idea is that you plant them in the fall and they bloom in the spring during April, which is Parkinson's Awareness Month.
Uh-huh.
So you get that nice, really beautiful visual reminder of the folks that you're seeking to serve. And then those impacted see the blooms and know that they're being supported by their community. So that's the objective.
And as we mentioned, a fundraiser for the Hancock County Parkinson's Network, which is still relatively new, been around for a couple of years now. Talk a little bit about what you do and the mission of the Parkinson's Network.
Certainly. Thanks. Well, it started with me becoming an ambassador for the Davis Finney Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And that program is all about reaching out to others, helping to support them, be a sounding board, being someone who can listen to their concerns, providing resources. And we had a community action committee as a part of that Davis Finney Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And then that ended up becoming a nonprofit this past March. So we did all the paperwork for a 501c3 and are official now. So,
so that's a pretty big accomplishment right there in itself.
For me, yes, it was. And our mission, I'm just going to read that to you because this is what guides all of our activities and our programs that we want to implement.
Mm-hmm.
The mission of the Hancock County Parkinson's Network is to empower individuals affected by Parkinson's and their caregivers by providing resources for education, programming, and support while raising community awareness about the disease.
And how do you do that? What are some of the programs and services you provide for those who, like yourself, are dealing with Parkinson's and for that larger awareness mission throughout the community?
Good timing to ask that question because this Monday we have our first real strategic planning committee meeting,
mm-hmm.
and that will be the purpose. You know, we've raised money through the Parkinson's Empower Walk last year that we came in and talked to you about.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we need to look at what are the needs? What do we need to do to help support people
mm-hmm.
and their caregivers? Looking at speakers being brought in, maybe additional exercise classes for people, including equipment that might be needed.
Mm-hmm.
Doing, you know, whatever we can, helping to provide support for the support group for Parkinson's.
So a lot of big plans and goals.
Yes.
What has been the response since launching the Parkinson's Network, the Hancock County Parkinson's Network? Have you been surprised by the response, the reaction that you get from the community and from others who are saying, yeah, this is something that we need here?
Well, I think the best indicator of that is we had over 300 people attend the Empower Walk.
Mm.
And just the feeling of support, the feeling of, you know, their need to learn more about Parkinson's disease was mm-hmm. truly evident at that event, which was obviously a huge success.
Yeah. Sometimes it's just that support and knowing that you're not alone and, you know.
Correct.
Yeah. So the tulip bulb sale is going on right now.
Yes.
Yes. For how long?
For as long as we need to sell tulip bulbs.
Oh, okay.
But
there
frankly,
you go. That's,
we're basically doing the big focus right now, the outreach to the community and media and so forth during the month of August.
Okay.
But they're available as long as we have them on hand. And
okay.
we have thousands of them coming into town. And we are really looking forward to seeing them get in the ground.
Really, really reasonable.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you can landscape your whole home for spring.
Exactly.
Not a lot of money here.
And that was really kind of the point. We wanted it to be an accessible way for anybody to get involved
mm-hmm.
That they could. And the benefit that you get, we're not asking you to put a banner or a sign in front of your house, but just to have these really beautiful tulips. So
mm-hmm.
it's a great thing that will also dovetail with our second annual walk, which will be taking place at the same time. So that will be a great thing. But they'll be sold in packets of 25 for $20. 50 for 35 or 100 for 65. So just a really reasonable price point.
Yeah.
Now you got to plant them.
Right.
But it's not too bad. And I like to offer my tip when I talk to folks, which
okay.
is you get right there on Amazon.com. You order an auger bit for your drill.
Okay.
And they are perfectly sized. If somebody wants to reach out to me, my email's in the on the website, and I'll send you the link.
It goes
really smoothly, except, you know, we did actually hit our watering system, so there was a little collateral damage, but I don't count the time of repair in the planting time, which went quickly.
You sound very much like my adventures in gardening as well. So I think you and I are on the same wavelength. We were talking a little bit before we went on the air, as a matter of fact. The one thing that I love about tulips is that they are pretty easy. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's you can't really mess these up.
And they are they are beautiful. They are very large. If you were to compare them to the size of the ones you might see, typically in big displays this time of year, they're really exceptionally large, which means they have beautiful blooms. And we also selected this particular hybrid because it has a very high rate of naturalization, which is to say much more likely to come up year after year, which is wonderful.
Well, that was the other thing too. Again, we talk about the tulip being sort of the international symbol of Parkinson's, and they bloom right there, Parkinson's Awareness Month, in the spring, but also it's the resilience of the tulip that makes it the symbol. And maybe, Barb, you can kind of speak to that resilience of those with Parkinson's and those who support those with Parkinson's.
Yeah, truly the support has been amazing. You know, Parkinson's is one of those diseases that there's really not a lot of knowledge about. I mean, in my own experience, I really thought of Parkinson's as just people that shake.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, did I have to learn a lot about my own disease.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a way to reach out to others, to remind them of the fact that we probably have a very large number of people in this town who have Parkinson's, some who maybe are not even identified and diagnosed as.
That was one of the things that I thought was interesting when I was doing some research on this. Is they say like 500,000 diagnosed cases of Parkinson's in the U.S., but the estimates are that it could be double that number.
Yes, true.
People who are undiagnosed.
And that's 10 million worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
Every 6 seconds, another person is diagnosed.
You know, we don't want to alarm people, but there's a constellation of symptoms that are prodromal in the case of Parkinson's that could be anything. Mm-hmm. And so people will just present to the physician sometimes of like, I've got a list of things. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
And it just, it kind of, people write it off for too long, and early diagnosis is really key. So we want people to be aware about that. And that's why a lot of our educational materials and our outreach things help with that as well.
Yeah. It's so true with any medical condition, but especially something like Parkinson's. Now, how do folks order the tulips?
Well, there's a variety of ways you can do it. You check us out on social media and you can see the link there. Our website, which is Parkinson's Network. Got to read it right off the paper there. hcparkinsonsnetwork.org has all the information about TULIP. And then my telephone number is in the paper today. You can call me directly. I'll hook you up. But it's not that hard. We have an online ordering system. But if you need an invoice or you want to write a check, we can make that happen for you. Pickup for them will be in the fall on October 12th at the College First Church of God.
All right.
But if you order more than 100, we make sure a nice, cheerful volunteer delivers them right to your doorstep.
There we go. Added incentive to spend more. But it's all for a great cause. And we do have a link up on our webpage as well, so you can learn more about the tulip bulb sale and all of the work of the Hancock County Parkinson's Network.
Oh, thank you.
Again, goodmornings.net for that. Linda DeArmond and Bart Matheny with us this morning. Thanks very much for dropping by.
Thank you.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program. Of course, remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. Check us out online at goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow morning, it seems everyone has embraced this idea of tax-free tips. Will it help restaurant owners fill open jobs for servers and other workers? We'll take a look at the results from Square's latest quarterly restaurant report. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. Catch you back here tomorrow.